Would you extend them?
Just watch me.
No, I've got cancer in my lungs.
Meat pepper, I put it on my plate.
Set on fire in downtown Vancouver, some windows broken in office buildings. Riot police have been deployed trying to control.
A century later, Vancouver has hardened. The roads are all paved now, and the structures lining them are formed from rebar and concrete. The neighborhood around the hotel has descended into unyielding poverty, while the bourgeoisie sit poised in trendy shops around its perimeter. The Patricia Hotel continues to serve underfunded travelers, and in the evenings showcases local performers in the same room where Jelly Roll and Ada shook the walls. For the past decade, East Vancouver has hosted an inspired musical moment, which prowled through the venues on Hastings Street. Shearing sonics and daring performances were on offer as young musicians expressed themselves and grasped for things out of reach. Their vibrations often left to mingle with those of Ada and Jelly Roll in the brick walls of Pat's Pub. Ryan Dick is a local record label owner and musician.
I don't know if Pat's is really in an entertainment district anymore. I mean, closer to Gastown, I've definitely noticed there's a lot more clubs and a lot more, like, normal people coming in from the suburbs to go, you know, do whatever normal people do on a Friday night, which is kind of nice because you don't have to deal with suburbanites for the most part.
Adrian Burris is a musician based in Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely one of the venues that was plugged into what was happening in the music scene. Like, it was a safe place, it was fun, it was, you know, easy to get a show there, there was always shows happening.
Vancouver at that point was well known for, like, cutesy indie pop stuff, and then all these bands started that were making pretty noisy punk music, which, so it was pretty exciting, it was really fun.
I definitely wanted in, and I definitely wanted to be part of what I thought was really progressive and interesting music.
Music Waste is a local music festival, and we try to focus on new artists every year. Yeah, Pat's has always been really supportive of Music Waste. They always are happy to give us the days, and there's been some pretty fun shows there.
I've never really felt unsafe in the Hastings area. You know, I've been attacked in Surrey, but not on Hastings. People look out for each other down here, and they care about each other, and yeah.
Richard Peterson and Deborah Adams stayed in the Patricia Hotel in the summer of 2014.
We arrived in Vancouver a warm July afternoon. I had booked a room at the Patricia Hotel. The area where the hotel stands is one of the most infamous in Vancouver. Everyone knows that East Hastings is a place you will die instantly. A hotel on Hastings is one where the doors won't lock, the faucets will drip, and the door to the bathroom will be lightweight with a minimum 2-inch gap at the bottom. An adventure. Deborah wasn't so sure. Her tropical vacation a few months earlier had been loaded. Love and the idea of forever was on my mind. The place was going to be perfect, and it wasn't. Something didn't feel right. It was the turning point. The Patricia has a great location. Eat some baozi from Chinatown, or the most trendy burger at that upstairs place down Main. The hotel is old. It's great. Instantly transported to my grandmother's house. The counter guy was efficient and so very concerned with who came first. We came first. He reached across the counter and hit the elevator button for us. How pleasant. Some real old-timey service. All food and beer with friends that evening. Things were chatty and enjoyable. Deborah mentioned the thing. It was our big argument before we left China. I was a little drunk and said something that could have been sexy, but ended up not so. I could see she wanted to tell the story. I was slightly opposed. When I returned from the bathroom, the secret had been kept, and for the rest of my trip, I was swamped by questions unanswered. Deborah was tired, but I had decided long ago that I would go to a concert that evening. I was racked with guilt and trying to make up for the approved activity for that evening. Offering to go back with her and then come back, though, it was clear I didn't want to. I believe the words were, "You're acting like a douche." I was. She was fine. I returned to the hotel at 2 a.m. and joined a sleeping Deborah in the soft bed. A couple days later, my friends were invited to our room in the early morning in order to stage a walking adventure through town. We were four now, and the room tightened accordingly. Hello, a woman yelled profanity into the void. A bus pushed into a lane. My friends commented on the strange bathroom layout. Deborah remarked how she could take a dump and put her feet up on the bed at the same time. On our way to the lobby, my buddy and I bolted down the stairs. Century-old floorboards thundered. Deborah and Larry took the elevator. After a day of fun in the sun, Deborah was a little tired of hanging with people she didn't really know and wanted alone time. A decision to flee was made as the sun slipped away. No guilt tonight. A cab ride got us back to the open arms of Pat's Pub and the last hours of Jazz Fest. Gentle music flowed out of the fire exit where we smoked frequently, a behavior seemingly out of fashion around most of Vancouver. The neighborhood around the Patricia Hotel isn't particularly fashionable, however. Our smokes were in high demand. Deborah was flying out the next day, but I was staying behind, leaving the Patricia for my friend's couch. Deborah and I said a goodbye that lingered, one of our last. My buddy picked us up at the hotel and drove us to Waterfront Station for a last-minute stroll before the airport. On the way to my friend's place, we drove past the Patricia. It may just be where all roads in Vancouver lead. The kidney of the city. It was sunny.
Most recently, the Patricia Hotel has reclaimed its musical roots and established itself as one of Vancouver's premium jazz venues. Several days a week, local performers take charge of the stage and aspire to have their tones connect with listeners.
As a jazz musician in Vancouver, knowing that one of the geniuses of jazz music played there, that really affects the feel of the place. The first time I walked through those doors, I just felt this connection to the past. I felt like this sort of, I was just sort of awestruck. Like this is where it happened, you know. And so I know as a performer, I feel there's a certain energy there that that comes from knowing what the past was.
James Dandifer continues to perform in Vancouver and can be reached at jamesdandifer.com. Adrian Burris performs as Adrian Teacher with his latest group, The Subs. Ryan Dick continues to support essential local talent with his record label, Hockey Dad Records. Lonnie Russworm's book, Vancouver Was Awesome, can be found at your local bookstore and library. And James Johnstone hosts walking tours of historic Vancouver neighborhoods and can be reached at historywalksinvancouver.blogspot.ca. Produced with the support and assistance of CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, and the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Between 2016 and 2018, more than 2 million people in Somalia fled their homes, finding refuge elsewhere within their country. Some said they left because of violent conflict. Even more said they left because of drought.
We know that Somalia experienced a severe drought since 2016.
That's Lisa Thelheimer of Oxford University. To better understand how hot, dry conditions contributed to internal displacement, she analyzed roughly 3 years of weather data. She found that a reduction in precipitation from about 2 inches a month to zero led to a fourfold increase in the number of people who relocated, and a small increase in monthly temperatures, just a few degrees more than the average for that time of year, led to up to 10 times more displaced people. She also identified a lag time of about 3 months between a big decrease in rain and people's relocation.
So it takes people really 3 months to say, like, no, we cannot take it anymore, We have to leave. We have no other choice.
So the study suggests that governments and humanitarian groups can anticipate increases in migration. And by acting early to support vulnerable people, they could help ensure that fewer have to flee. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Everybody would be better off if the price of fossil fuels was honest. It should include its cost to society.
Now, Stephen, you say the sun is out. It looks like a white wall behind you. I can't imagine living like that.
Deadlier than before, health conditions like heart attacks more common. A highly anticipated report from one of the world's leading medical journals says climate change could cause all of that.
The climate crisis is more severe than even many scientists have acknowledged.
Climate change is the most complex problem in human history. It threatens our livelihoods and all species on the planet. While the situation seems bleak, there's lots of positive change happening. People have come together around the world to stand up against big corporations and idle leaders. My name is Rebecca Visser. This story is about the concerned citizens fighting this battle and their unwavering commitment to social and climate justice. Who are the people on the front lines of the climate movement?
I think we're on the verge of an exciting time. The bad man in Ottawa is gone. Divestment campaigns are gaining momentum. Pipeline proposals are collapsing. New investments in the tar sands and LNG are evaporating.
We have many options for what to do. We have many options to follow through with on how to turn around this really messed up state the entire world is in. But unless we are led with love, we're not going to get anywhere. So I say Haitsepka to each of you for being here with light and love and peace in your hearts.
On an icy Friday night, I went to an art build at the Toast Collective. Here, a group of about 10 people were preparing displays for the upcoming Vancouver Climate March in solidarity with other demonstrations taking place around the world. With 2 days left, last-minute plans and banners still needed to be completed. The whole floor was covered with blue, red, and green paint, canvases and cardboard, artfully crafted into props and signs. This is Claire describing what they've been working on.
This is the Alliance of Small Island States, which always shows up at the COP and struggles a lot for recognition because of sea level rise, they will actually go underwater.
Right, they're
struggling for survival. So this is what we wanted to draw on. This whole boat is just about like rising ocean levels. And sort of, it's sort of alluding to the fact that these people will be climate refugees. We still have to make that. a lot of ideas. Not a lot of cardboard.
I caught up with a few prominent leaders. They each found their own way into activism and carved their own roles into the climate movement. Let's start with Peter.
My name's Peter McCartney. I'm the climate campaigner for the Wilderness Committee.
I asked him how he got into climate justice.
In university, in journalism school, I got exposed to what was going on in climate change, and when I heard about this, I thought, oh, if people only knew this story, if people could only be informed. It's a really difficult story to communicate sometimes, you know, an invisible gas that we're all part of and that threatens our future on this planet. And I thought, if you could tell this story right, then people would be motivated to take action in their own lives.
Kishelle is also active in the community. She took a break from studying for her finals to speak with me over the phone.
My name is Kishelle Thiessen, and I'm on the board of 350 Vancouver. I'm also a mother of two children and an economics student at SFU.
We were talking about her role in the movement.
I was very entrenched in the idea that I was going to make a change academically. I love to write. I love doing research. And so I really saw my piece in that puzzle as being someone doing kind of behind-the-scenes work in policy. And that's what drove me to go into economics.
Kishelle is a very passionate person. It's hard to imagine her in a stuffy economics class. That said, she believes policy is a crucial component to solving climate change. But even she recognizes that this strategy has its difficulties at times.
Right around all the Burnaby Mountain stuff that was happening last year, I was getting increasingly frustrated because we were always told that you're supposed to make a change. People say, don't go out and scream in the streets. You're supposed to do all of these proper processes first, right? Your MLAs, get laws changed. And yet it was the government changing the laws. They changed the NEB process and they made it harder for people to have their voice. And I saw these other people out there protesting and then they said, well, we're going to put an injunction in so that you can't actually protest. And that point, I just snapped because everyone was saying, you know, you've got to do it in these legal avenues, but the government itself was changing those legal avenues so there was no venue for the common person to speak.
Now, the Burnaby Mountain stuff Cashel is referring to is the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion that was proposed to go through Burnaby Mountain Conservation Area. Kinder Morgan is the company who applied for the expansion, sending workers to survey the area and began excavating the land. Cashel was among the hundreds to protest the proposal in November 2014. Also there was Valine Jules, an Indigenous youth activist.
Na'atich uklas ish Valine Jules histitis nuchanos uch ish kokwakuwak nations.
She had a life-changing experience during the protest, and she wanted to spend the anniversary of the injunction as she had the year before, next to the sacred fire, hissing because of the moisture on its bark. We were sitting on the side of Burnaby Mountain along with Cashel and a few others.
Probably half of you don't know, Burnaby Mountain was my turning point in joining this movement. And because I was initially doing a research project in college in relation to economics and politics, the two topics I've avoided my entire life. And I stumbled upon the word decolonization, and I never heard of it before. So I was intensively looking into the journey of decolonization and the meaning behind that word. And one of the questions that stood out for me in relation to revolution and decolonization and positive change was, how can we take action for meaningful change beyond protesting and raising awareness? And I asked the big leagues this question, the academics, the professors, and people who've been involved a lot longer than me. And surprisingly, they struggled to answer. So afterward, I realized I've never been to one protest or raised awareness on the issues that are important to me. So I went to the nearest protest up the mountain just to witness it. And I became so inspired by the people's stories and how passionate everybody was, not just about resisting destructive pipelines or respecting Indigenous rights. They were passionate about much more than that, and you could see it in their eyes and hear it in their words and feel it in their presence, and that just inspired me. Well, saying it inspired me is an understatement. Mm-hmm. Like, it was that big for me. It was my turning point, my serendipity, and I ended up living right here under a tarp for 11 days and made the most difficult decision of my life and sacrificed schooling, college basketball, and self-care to commit myself to this movement and to creating real change.
Valine is only 19 years old. She is wise beyond her age. Her insights are razor sharp, and everything she says is shrouded with beauty. She was one of the speakers at the Climate March on Sunday, November 29th, 2015. The day is sunny, but the air is cold. Everyone is excited and joyful. Peter and I met up at the march. We talked about why this is such an important day and what still needs to be done.
Well, we're here at the Vancouver Art Gallery. We're going to march around downtown in solidarity with communities all across the world, telling our world leaders that are meeting in Paris that we need real meaningful action on climate change now. I think people really started to connect the dots and say this isn't a problem for future generations. This is a problem now, and that really, we don't have time to waste. Meaningful action means stopping fossil fuel export projects. It means cutting fossil fuel subsidies and designing communities that that allow people to reduce their carbon footprint.
I asked him, what else can people do to get involved?
There's kind of two sides to the coin. There's opposed projects like the LNG terminals, coal exports, and pipelines that are coming through your communities. You know, in British Columbia, that's a great way for citizens to get involved. You can sign petitions, you can write your local leaders. There's a groundswell of communities here that are on the front lines opposing those projects. The other side, obviously, activism necessarily isn't for everybody, but if you take action to make your community greener, plant community gardens, advocate for better transit, there's all these solutions to climate change that we need everyone involved.
I pose the same question to Kishel.
And I would invite people to be concerned citizens who are engaged with the political system, rather than creating this tiered system of environmentalists and activists. It's something we should all be doing and something we all can do. Everyone's going to have their own doorway to get involved, and often for an individual, something's going to come up that speaks to them so strongly that they can't ignore it, and they're going to find a way to get involved. But I think there's also a problem where folks aren't sure where the right place to get involved is, and we're told so often not to reinvent the wheel, so folks are wary of getting involved in something that they don't know if it's already being done. So I think if someone is interested, the best thing that they can do is reach out and see what's going on locally in their communities. If they're interested in climate justice, there's probably someone working on it there. And the best thing they can do is go to a few meetings, see what's happening, and ask what they can do to get involved. If that seems a little bit daunting, we really need to get back into the habit of writing our elected officials. These letters actually do mean something.
I asked her, what do you love most about your activist work?
Being in these groups of people working towards these amazing things, so much heart, so much sacrifice, so much knowledge from all the different people I meet. It's been this amazing community, and I've learned so much from people. And I think one of the best parts, if we're going to use the word activist, the best part of being an activist is that you get to work every day with the people you admire.
A year ago, I was really confused about my place in the climate movement, and I didn't know what I should do or the right place to be was. And I posed this question to our next speaker, and he said that it's kind of like trying to get a tree up a mountain. If everybody grabs onto the tree in the same place, you have too much energy going into one place and you're going to fail. But if everybody grabs onto the tree in the place that feels right, you'll all work together to bring the tree up the mountain. The message in this is that you should continue working on what you're passionate about. You should find your place in the climate movement. You matter and you make a difference.
To you for inspiration. I want to bring you back to when you were 5 years old and ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? You may say a teacher, or a bird, or an astronaut, or a star. You may change your mind several times, The beautiful thing about this is that you had the creativity, the imagination, and the passion needed to believe in yourself. You had the courage to declare that there are endless possibilities. This passion fades with the years when you realize that you are growing up in a competitive, capitalist society that is responsible for the issue of our time, climate change. This passion fades when you become familiar with the idea of impossible. But you should know that impossible is an opinion, not a fact.
What's most inspiring about Kishel, Peter, and Baleen is while they are leaders, they are also people like you and me. They see climate change as a monumental challenge for our generation, but they're doing something about it. We need everyone involved because this is a problem that affects us all. We need to revolutionize our relationship with the Earth to protect our ability to live on it. Produced with support and assistance of CJSF 90.1 FM on unceded Coast Salish territory, Burnaby, BC, and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. I want to thank Baleen Jules, Peter McCartney, and Kishel Thiessen for their involvement in this project, and all of the people I spoke with along the way. Thanks to Alex Brown for his piano sample, and thanks to Jamie Sesford for all of his help.
Trolling college music so you don't have to. No loyalties, no orthodoxy. Keeping it real, dumb, and organic since 2019. Tune into Home of Burnaby Rock with John on Fridays from 6 to 8 p.m.